Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. I don't love
you anymore. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. Today, we're going to start off, as we always do, with the latest on health and healing and slowing down and reversing the aging process wherever possible. Then we're going to continue with an in-depth, original investigative report by a group of physicians, all board certified, and everyone you hear speaking is a physician, on the whole myth that because you may have an elevated cholesterol that puts you at greater risk of heart disease. It does not, in and of itself. And the science shows that. Then why have we been taking statin drugs? Why have we been on these cholesterol-reducing diets? Surely the American Heart Association and the other leading College of Cardiologists would have said, that's bad science, bad public health. But they didn't. They were part of the problem. So we're offering the solution, and it's not me saying this. It's all these professors, chairman of the Department of Harvard University, cardiologist. You'll hear him. Leading academics saying this. And so that's very important. And I'm doing it in short segments, like 6-7 minutes, because it's really packed. And each day I'll add to that. Also, if time permits today, I'm going to have on a Thomas Sowell. He's an African-American who went to a public school, did not do well, then went on to Howard University, did better, then went to Harvard and did best of all those. But he has some specific ideas of what's wrong with the educational system and how African-Americans have been misaligned. Those are his views. So what we're going to do is I'm going to start a new series. I'm going to play some video clips from people who have a point of view that you can agree or disagree. And I believe that we learn, we grow when we're challenged. And that when we hear someone who has something to say that we say, yeah, that makes sense, or someone we say, that does make any sense, I'm giving you an opportunity to call in and share your point of view. So during our talk back segment, which will follow that, write down this number, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and I'll have it on, let's say, vaccines or finance, education, pharmaceuticals, different types of disease. And I'll have a person that has a point of view that is frequently controversial, but we need to hear. I believe it's a great disservice when we cut off people that we disagree with. I will have someone have an opportunity to say something, if for no other reason than for them to show how misguided they are in their statements, or offering me an opportunity to challenge that point of view. Censorship is not a good response to views we disagree with. Also today, if time permits, I'm going to share a commentary from a man I respect, Glenn Ford. Nellie Bailey, Bruce Dixon, these are people who hold a very challenging point of view to what they see as systemic racism or injustice in our system. And they had the intelligence, the insight, the experience to write some really critical commentaries. This is one from Glenn Ford. It is called Why Bernie Sanders is an Imperialist Pig. Very inflammatory. So I'm going to share it with you. And then again, you'll have a chance to agree or disagree. But before you disagree or agree, listen to what he has to say. See whether or not it makes sense or not. Also today, we keep hearing the Russians did it. The Russians did it. Well, Gregory Barrett, a fearless muckraking, disagrees. And I want you to hear what he has to say in a commentary. Also, the other night, if you had a chance to listen to the Progressive Commentary Hour, which for me is my most enjoyable hour broadcasting every week, I take a single theme, might be the World Bank, or might be the for-profit prison system, or the war on drugs. It's always an important topic, and I take one, two, or three guests who are experts on that field, and we go into depth. That's a deep program. And this past Tuesday, my program was based upon why are we as a nation not addressing any of the important issues in a progressive way? For example, why couldn't we vote for Jill Stein? I had Jill on the program twice, and I challenged her. I don't do these softball interviews. And I said, Jill, either tell me yes or no on these points. And I gave her 41 points. Would you promote single health care? Yes. Would you reinstate Glass-Steagall Act? Yes. Would you close down the Federal Reserve and turn all of our monetary system over to the Treasury so they could offer loans at zero interest? Yes. Would you forgive all debt, student debt? Yes. Would you promote free public education at public institutions? Private institutions have a right to exist. They have a right to charge whatever they want, and you have a right to pay that. But you can't have it both ways. You can't say, I want to go to Harvard, a private school, and pay their high tuition or New York University, but I can't handle the debt. Well, then go to a public school, and we should promote public education free. She said, yes. Would you close down all the military bases? Yes. Would you send diplomats, peacekeepers, and religious, non-denominational leaders, spiritual leaders around the world, trying to show some contrition and amends for all the crimes against humanity we have perpetrated in the last, you know, since World War II at least? Yes. Every single progressive ideal she said yes to, and yet under a million people, including progressives, did not vote for her. They voted for Hillary Clinton or they didn't vote. Why? A very legitimate, very important issue. Are we a nation that claims to be progressive and are not? Are we a nation that claims to want to do something about the environment, and yet we continue doing all the wrong things? Why do we live in such a contradictory state of mind? We say we want health, and then we eat foods that are clearly going to cause disease. We say we want better politicians, and what we go to the swamp and promote these. So I'm taking one part of Rabbi Michael Lerner, who is the most progressive rabbi I know. I don't know all of them, but I know a lot. I befriended a lot. And he is unique. He's a very important part of the civil rights movement, as was his father. He is a part of the human rights movement. He supports a peaceful end to the conflict in Palestine. He has called out, where it's appropriate, the apartheid conditions. And yet, listen what he has to say. It'll surprise you. And then again, in my talkback segment, you can say yes or no. I agree or disagree with him. But at least you'll have a chance to hear a different point of view that the mainstream media and alternative media are not allowing on. So as you see, we have a lot to share today. Let's begin. There are new findings on neurodevelopmental conditions. University of Pittsburgh found that GABA, which is a very important nutrient, and this was published in Biological Psychiatry, provides an unprecedented level of resolution and insight into the disturbances in cortical GABA microcircuits. Now, in lay language, what this means is that if you run a deficiency of a particular nutrient, GABA, in the brain, you can end up with symptoms like schizophrenia. You will clearly be diagnosed with a mental condition, though it's not a mental condition, it's a nutritional deficiency condition, and can easily be corrected with GABA. So I'm glad to see that this is finally getting done. Now, this kind of information should be shared with all psychologists and psychiatrists, because if they're not aware that nutrients like vitamin B6 and phosphatidylserine and acetyl L-carnitine and resveratrol, choline and inositol, simple nutrients, inexpensive nutrients, easy to get, can be given for people who have bipolar, for having anxiety, for having all forms of clinically diagnosed conditions, and they're merely nutrient deficiencies. And I've seen thousands of people who were told, well, you got to take this, you know, Zoloft, Effexor, all these drugs for the rest of your life. They didn't. Rebalance their total body biochemistry, get rid of inflammatory agents, rebalance the nutrients. Suddenly they're normal. So that's good. Also, for those of you using hair dyes, a lot of people do, Rutgers University Cancer Institute did the research. They examined 4,000 women who used dark brown and black hair dyes, especially for African-American women, and they had a 51% greater risk of breast cancer. And also, whites who used hair relaxers had a 74% higher odds of breast cancer. So, quote, our findings do not suggest that simply using hair dyes, relaxers, or both will cause a woman to get breast cancer. The reality is that we regularly encounter a variety of harmful exposures which we have no control over, and they believe that it contributes to breast cancer. So here's the solution. There are multiple natural, non-toxic hair relaxers and hair coloring agents. Use one of them. You can find them in any health food store. Many of you might remember that about 15 years ago, I did a debate with a leading advocate for a high-protein diet, mainly meat, eggs, dairy. He was a part of the Justin Price Foundation, and he condemned soy. In fact, they were really challenging soy. And so I asked him to come on. He came on for an hour. We did an hour debate. And I let him start by laying out his arguments, and he was very articulate and made some very insightful decisions of why soy for certain people may not be good, could actually promote goiter. But for people who do not suffer from a particular thyroid disorder, I found 5,100 studies in the peer-reviewed literature that supported the use of soy for reducing breast cancer, ovarian cancer, prostate cancer, heart disease, turning off inflammation in the body. I mean, it covered all bases, and that's a lot of studies to promote something. This is just the latest. This is from Tufts University, and it was published in the peer-reviewed Cancer. Quote, soy foods can potentially have an impact on overall health and balanced diet, and also can help women with breast cancer. So, and this was studied by the Friedman School at Tufts University. So here's the takeaway message. I would never advocate a soy diet, but I do advocate non-genetically engineered soy. Soy is in miso, in tempeh, in tofu, in soy milk, as a part of an overall healthy diet. And there's a particular group of substances, aside from being high in amino acids and protein, you're getting the isoflavones. And these are extremely important in helping balance the intake of healthy plant-based estrogens versus meat-based estrogens. One is 16, that's the meat. One is 2, that's the plant. You want the 2s, not the 16s. And because when those 2s fill up the receptor sites on your breast, you're not going to get breast cancer from that. But when the meat-inspired estrogens go on your breast or prostate, then you end up more susceptible to cancer. So one more in a long litany of studies. I believe now there are over 8,000 studies showing the power of soy. Green tea, capsaicin, which is red pepper, ginger combo linked to weight and metabolic improvements. This is from Cashin University Medical School, and it says, published in the Annals of Nutrition and Metabolism, dietary supplements containing green tea, red pepper, and ginger can lead to weight loss and improvements in your body mass index. That's the fat around the belly and the abdomen, but also can help with the symptoms of diabetes, pre-diabetic or diabetic and metabolic syndrome. Quote, our study indicated that taking green tea, capsaicin, and ginger for 8 weeks among overweight women had beneficial effects on weight and markers of insulin metabolism and plasma glutathione levels. So that's good. And by the way, we're not talking about a lot. 500 milligrams of green tea, 100 milligrams of capsaicin, 200 milligrams of ginger. That's not a lot. You could easily do that for yourself. In fact, a great way, if you're overweight or have diabetes or pre-diabetic conditions, which 100 million Americans do, is simply in the morning, take the juice of one lemon, cut a little piece, if you're watching, about that much, about an inch piece of ginger root, juice it, one teaspoon of apple cider vinegar, and then mix in 200 milligrams of green tea. Dilute that, put all that into a 16-ounce glass of green juice. I would throw in some cinnamon, and you can throw in some curcumin powder. Drink that down, and boy, have you done a lot of good for your body. All your organs will benefit. You'll benefit. This is from Baycrest Center for Geriatric Care, and they say that when trying to memorize information, it is better to relate it to something meaningful rather than repeat it again and again and again to make it stick. This is published in NeuroChange. Quote, when we're learning new information, our brain has two different ways to remember the material for a short period of time, either by mentally rehearsing the sounds of the words or thinking about the meaning of the words. Both strategies are good for short-term memory, but focusing on the meaning is more effective for retaining the information later on. So how would I use that? It's simple. We keep trying to memorize something by just repetition. Why not associate a story with it? In other words, take something you got to do. For example, let's say each morning, that juice I just mentioned, you got to do that. But now you think, well, all right, what did he say? He said apple cider vinegar, apple cider vinegar, apple cider vinegar, apple cider vinegar. He said lemon juice, lemon juice, lemon juice. Better if you took each one of those items, put them in front of you, looked at each one, and said, I'm going to take that lemon each morning. I'm going to take that ginger each morning. I'm going to take that cayenne. I'm going to take the cinnamon. I'm going to take the apple cider vinegar. And I'm going to take the green tea. And then you look at it. By looking at it and saying, this is for my blood. This is for my heart. This is for my liver. This is for my brain. Each one of these is good for a different part of my body. Your body then associates those items with something good. And we remember things much easier when it's something we like. It's like you go to a concert and you like something in the concert, you remember it because you're associating something, a stimuli, with memory. So that's what it means. Simple, easy. Also, from the Natural Blaze, edible flowers, including nasturtiums, with amazing health benefits. And it goes into the different edible flowers that are used here. And there's a lot of edible flowers, by the way. Let's see, last year I grew over 27 different types of edible flowers for myself. Because when I make a salad, I always like to add in the edible flowers because they give you a different mouthfeel, a different look. And if you eat slow, like slow eating, where you take your time, you put on some wonderful, relaxing music, and you don't just gobble it down. You can take a bite of something and relax, have the mouthfeel, the taste, the aftertaste. And, for example, the flowers of garlic give you a wonderful, mild garlic flavor. And then you add in other flavors to balance that. For example, I like to put lemon and cinnamon basil in salads. It surprises people because they're looking for the lemon, they're looking for the basil, and they don't see it. It's in the actual basil. And you can make licorice basil. You can grow it. And it just gives you variety. And so, and they're very good for you. Here's the latest quote. And this is just the nasturtium. Respiratory system diseases, asthma, bronchitis, excessive mucus, inflammatory diseases, cough, cold, flu, emphysema, kidney disease, urinary tract diseases, inflammation, urinary incontinence, diseases of the hair and scalp, skin disorders, diseases of the liver and bile, poor performance, poor secretion, regulating menstruation, diabetes, boosting sex drive in men, boosting physical and mental energy, and part of the treatment of cancer. And that's just one edible flower. So consider that when you're either going to the farmer's market. I went down to the farmer's market on Saturday down at Union Square. They had a lot of really interesting things, and one of the tables had edible flowers, about 15 different varieties. So bring some edible flowers into your life. Now we're going to play you part two of our, not our, but a great investigative report. All the voices you're hearing are physicians, and most are academics from major universities, and talking about why you don't live longer with statins, you don't benefit from the statins, except 1%. Well, hello, if 1% or 2% benefit, that means 98% to 99% didn't. And what doctors don't tell you is, okay, what's the side effects? So I looked at the physician's desk reference on side effects to the statins. They're deadly, not the least of which, they're bad for your kidneys, bad for your liver, but also they destroy ubiquinol, coenzyme Q10, and that can end up causing your to have a heart attack, and also affects your brain. You need your mitochondria. You need energy. So you walk around taking a statin, and then you're chronically fatigued. But listen to what they have to say.
100 will benefit from taking a statin. What people don't understand is that means the other 98 will get no benefit at all. It's not going to reduce their chance of dying.
But this hasn't limited their use. These drugs are now being widely prescribed to relatively healthy people, those without diagnosed heart disease. And Dr. Redberg warns most of them won't benefit.
For healthy people, even people that have a lot of risk factors, so they might have high blood pressure, they might smoke, they might have diabetes, the data is not there to suggest that those people are better off taking a statin. No, I don't think it's a wonder drug.
What's your chance of a heart attack or stroke?
But Dr. David Sullivan disagrees. He says all risk factors should be considered equally, including cholesterol.
If you want to mount these arguments about not treating the cholesterol, you've got to take the responsibility of saying it's not necessary to treat these other risk factors either. I would certainly encourage people who are considering cessation of treatment for perceived side effects and so forth to discuss it with their doctor.
In 2012, there was an interesting turn of events. The CTT collaboration, a highly regarded group of researchers, reanalyzed all of the old data with different methods and concluded that statins were effective for the wider population. The report was subject to harsh criticism, but it's still the data that many cardiologists turn to. The media jumped on board and reported that everyone over the age of 50 should be taking a statin to reduce their risk of heart disease, even if you had normal cholesterol. But Professor Redberg says there's a downside.
None of those people are less likely to die. So you can take a statin for many, many years, and you're just as likely to die as if you had not taken a statin.
Unless you've already been diagnosed with heart disease, then taking a statin won't help you live longer. It may reduce your risk of a cardiovascular event, but it may also increase your risk of developing something else, like diabetes. Either way, taking a statin won't extend your lifespan. Dr. Abramson says cardiologists are so focused on how these drugs prevent blood vessel disease, they often overlook the other problems caused by statins.
People are more than their cardiovascular system. And what we really want to do is improve people's overall health, longevity, and their risk of serious illness. If you look at overall health, we haven't done anything for them. Now, do people want to take a statin to trade one cardiovascular event for some other very serious illness, in other words, no net benefit, and expose themselves to the risk of harm from the statins? Do you want to do that? I think it's a bad deal. If somebody has a particular fear of heart disease and says, look, I don't care if I get diabetes. I don't care if I have muscle symptoms. I don't care if I can't exercise the way I want to exercise. I do not want to have heart disease. Fine, take a statin, but understand that that's why you're taking a statin, not because it's going to improve your overall health.
Cardiologist Dr. Ernest Curtis says the absolute benefit of statins is so minor that it's unlikely to be because of their ability to lower cholesterol. He says statins probably work through other mechanisms.
It seems very likely that the amount of reduction that they saw with the statin agents could easily be due to its effect on the blood clotting and possibly even the anti-inflammatory effect and have nothing to do with the cholesterol.
Dr. Gallom has scrutinized the data and she's even more skeptical about the value of these drugs, especially in women.
Right now, the evidence has not supported benefit to women, even if they have heart disease, in terms of mortality and all-cause morbidity. It has not shown benefit to elderly, even if they have heart disease. In fact, in the 4S trial, there was a 12% increase in mortality in the women in that group who were assigned to statin rather than placebo. So the evidence really doesn't support that the benefit is the same for women and for men. And on top of that, women are at higher risk of complications from statins.
Should women take cholesterol-lowering medication?
In general, no. Now, there may be exceptions. Medicine actually does have an element of art. And if women are from a family with severe familial hyperlipidemia, where a lot of people are dying from heart disease in their 30s and 40s, that's a group where I would say there is an art.
There are now calls for patients to give written consent before taking a statin.
If you do plan to give statins to women, to elderly, to people at low risk, they should sign a consent form saying they understand that they're receiving a drug that will not extend their life, but will only shift the cause of death.
Now, we'll continue with the next part on our program tomorrow. It'll take about a week. Isn't it interesting that this was made by an Australian physician, and you haven't seen it in the United States? Could you imagine the impact of having a group of physicians, including professors, chairmen of departments of cardiology at Harvard and other places, come on a network whose ads are for statin drugs? That's never going to happen. This shows you that who pays for the ads frequently has direct or indirect control over content. Now, to finish up the first half hour, we're going to show you why you should think twice about having any of the French fries at McDonald's or any other company.
Fast food companies and other food processors drive down the cost of food relentlessly and force economies of scale and efficiencies, or what are called efficiencies, on farming. And I'll just give you one example. If you go to McDonald's, anywhere in the world, you will find French fries, or chips, as you call them, and you will find that they're always made from the same potato, the russet Burbank potato. This is a potato from America that's unusually long and difficult to grow. But that's what they want, because when you're McDonald's, you like those red boxes with a little bouquet of very long chips. It looks really good. And so they insist that all their potatoes be russet Burbanks, and they further insist that they have no blemishes at all. There's a very common defect of russet Burbank potatoes called net necrosis. And you've seen potatoes with a little brown line sometimes, or spots that come through it. Well, McDonald's won't buy them if your potatoes have that. And the only way to eliminate that is to eliminate an aphid. And the only way to do that is with a pesticide called Monitor that is so toxic that the farmers who grow these potatoes in Idaho won't venture outside into their fields for 5 days after they spray. And then when they harvest their potatoes, they have to put them in these atmosphere-controlled sheds the size of a football stadium because they're not edible for 6 weeks. They have to off-gas all the chemicals in them. So you see, the desire for a certain kind of chip leads to a certain kind of agriculture. But the other thing on the health side, when I started learning about nutrition, about which, by the way, much less is known than you might think, that the scientific understanding of nutrition is still very primitive. But I learned that what mattered most about one's health was not necessarily the nutrients, good or bad, that you were consuming or staying away from, or even the calorie counts. But what predicted a healthy diet more than anything else is the fact that it was being cooked by a human being and not a corporation. Corporations cook very differently than people do. They use vast amounts of salt, fat, and sugar, much more than you would ever use in your own cooking. And the reason they do that is those are three incredibly attractive and incredibly cheap ingredients. And when they're layered properly, as in a chip or various pastries and forms of junk food, they're incredibly addictive. And in fact, people in the industry, they don't talk about addiction in the food industry, even though they traffic in addiction. They talk about craveability. It's the same thing. And snackability.
I would just offer a different point of view on this one point he made, and that is that you can have equally bad food at home. If you watch many of the, if not almost all the food channels having food, you'll see that none of it's healthy. As an example, the other night, they had this man that runs around the country showing how you man food fire. And they have a whole pig that they roast over 12 hours. And then I wanted to see what he was offering, and he was offering up different ways doing chicken. They show barbecue. And then another show just specializes in barbecuing. None of that is healthy. That's all promoting disease, heart disease, cancers, diabetes, obesity. Now, that's not a corporation doing it. These are the people who are watching and then saying, oh, I like that. I can do that. Or I'll go to a restaurant that sells that. And you have a lot of independent restaurants. They're not a chain. They're not a part of corporate America. It's all over. It doesn't matter which city. And they have these specialty foods that are packed all the time. So I respect what he said on French fries. He is right. And also what he said on manufacturers create a certain taste that we like. But these are all unhealthy. But I wouldn't blame it all on the corporate America. Individuals also are engaged. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, a special commentary from Chris Hedges on we can't fight climate change if we keep lying to ourselves. I'll bring you up to date on some of the latest things happening in the environment and showing you, yeah, it's getting that hot. And the people in Phoenix know how hot. Yesterday it was 118, the day before 119, and so hot planes couldn't fly. Well, the people living in Phoenix and Tucson, which are side by side, here's some research for you. Where does your water come from? You have a big water theme park out there. You have all these green lawns flying into Phoenix, which I did recently. You see desert and then suddenly green. Where does that water come from? Is it sustainable? And yet Phoenix is one of the growing communities. In fact, I did a little plot out on a map of finding where are people moving to and where from. And they're moving to places that are simply non-sustainable. None of them. So we had better pay attention to this. In Phoenix, you don't have your own natural water supply. Hope you know that. Hope you also know where that comes from. And hope you take a look to see how low Lake Mead is and how much the Little Colorado, which serves almost 39 million people, almost 40 million people get their water out of there. And the snows are not up in the hills the way they were to melt over 6 months to provide water. You're in a non-sustainable dead zone. And then you stay indoors all day in 24/7 air conditioning, and you're contributing CO2, which then contributes to more of this, what we call positive feedback loop. So we want to wake people up, and we will in a moment. And then a special commentary from Rabbi Michael Lerner. Please stay with us.
Just me and you. It took a long time to get what we got today.
I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. For those of you who would like to listen to this program over a telephone, a cell phone, or a regular land phone, or even over your computer, let me give you the number, Monday to Friday, noon to 1, Tuesday 7 to 8, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. But let's say you're just busy. Here's what people don't realize. 98% of the people listening to me each day listen at night over the archives. So imagine that's where these huge numbers come from, because people are working during the day. Most people can't take the time. So here's the number I gave you was for the archives. So if you want to listen to the archives, you go to 701-719-9976. If you want to listen live, that number is 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850. I mentioned yesterday that we're packed for my upcoming 4-week health support group. However, what I'm going to do is today I'm going to go through and call each one of these people and make sure that they actually have medically verified diabetes, are overweight, or have arthritis. And if any of them don't, then they won't be in the study, and that'll make room for someone who does want to get in. Do not call, because we may be packed and have no room for anyone else. But I'll let you know tomorrow if there's any room left. Now, we have problems with the environment. I'm just going to go through some headlines now. This is, for example, Arctic and Antarctic is about to lose an ice shelf the size of Delaware. And this is from Pacifica Standard. Warming oceans and intensifying winds are combining to speed decay of the coastal ice. I've mentioned repeatedly that this is the Larsen C shelf, over 110 miles long, 300 feet wide, three quarters of a mile deep. When that goes, there's nothing holding back. You got to put this in your mind now. Anyone in the world who tells you, don't worry about that, that'll be long after you're dead, that person is incorrect. We are in chaos theory. In fact, right after the show today, I'm doing an hour interview because my guest is in Europe and he won't be available live next Tuesday. And he's a professor emeritus of climatology. And he is saying that we probably have no more than 5 years, before we have cataclysmic events happening around the world, which will cause massive societal breakdown, especially for the poor, working class. People will not be able to afford food, or people will be not able to have water or be able to live where they're at. And there's no plans right now anywhere in the world of how you help these people who are going to be environmental immigrants. In any case, it's a very dire picture, and we don't like bad news. So no one wants to hear it. No one's paying attention to it. But we want to tell you, so at least you can do what you can do. Then here's another one. This is from the BBC, from Jasmine Skelly. There are diseases hidden in the ice, and they are waking up. Long-dormant bacteria and viruses trapped in ice and permafrost for centuries are reviving as the Earth's climate warms. She said, throughout history, humans have existed side by side with bacteria and viruses. From the bubonic plague to smallpox, we have evolved to resist them. And in some response, they have developed new ways of infecting us. We've had antibiotics for almost a century, ever since Alexander Fleming discovered penicillin. In response, bacteria have responded by evolving antibiotic resistance. The battle is endless because we spend so much time with pathogens, we sometimes develop a kind of natural stalemate. However, what would happen if we were suddenly exposed to deadly bacteria and viruses that have been absent for thousands of years, or that we have never met before? And then it goes into how they just discovered a 12-year-old boy and in the Yamal Peninsula in the Arctic Circle who died, and when they checked him, he died from anthrax. Well, how does a boy in the Arctic get anthrax? Well, 75 years ago, a reindeer infected with anthrax died and was frozen, the carcass, and then when this warming weather came, it thawed and became exposed, and then it exposed over 2,000 reindeer grazing nearby. They became infected, which then led to the small number of human cases. The fear is that this is not an isolated case. And then it goes on to talk about how they're finding these mammoths, with these woolly mammoths, and when we had bubonic plagues and other in the past, they would just bury people. Now those frozen graveyards are coming out, and one huge graveyard in Russia was right at a riverbank. Well, now the whole riverbank is sliding into the water. That means all those corpses thawed out with all that disease that they died from is now going to be in the water, and that you can't control. This is another thing on the environment. This is from the Sue Bradford, and it says, Brazil on the verge of legitimizing Amazon land theft on a grand scale. And it goes on to talk about how they're going, and we all know how corrupt the Brazilian government is, they're going to turn over the Amazon, for all intents and purposes, to land developers. They're going to go in there and clear-cut it so the lungs of the planet are not going to be there to absorb CO2 and give off oxygen. So it's going to create a desertification of the Amazon, and that means the rain that would normally come from trees in the Amazon is not going to be there. So it's just unmitigated greed. But then again, which country in the world can say we're not bound by greed and the principles of laissez-faire? So we'll look out first for nature and the people. No, that doesn't exist anywhere. Quote, to curb climate change, we need to protect and expand U.S. forests. This is from The Conversation, William Munall, and he is right. We should be spending at least $1 trillion to reforest the whole planet, and we could. Put forest everywhere, grow trees everywhere, billion trees in the United States, but go around the world, Mexico, other places, and plant trees. Hire people, that's good for them. Plant trees, and that creates new carbon sinks and water storage areas. We're not doing it. So that's just a, you know, an idea of how serious it is. Now, we must embrace a despair that unflinchingly acknowledges the bleak future that will be created by climate change. I'll be having a group of individuals on, six of them, for a two-hour special in 2 weeks. These are the finest minds that we can find on the planet. These are highly qualified people, and they will tell you the truth. And that truth will not align with anything that you're conscious of today. It will not align with any body politic. It won't align with any identity politics. It's just going to be the truth right in your face, and it's going to be 10,000-watt glare. And it's going to show you, man, we have run out of time. If we don't do something individually, nothing will be done collectively. Now, my view, nothing will be done at all. I do not see people changing their character, their quality of life. I do not see anyone in the corporate structures and the government structures who profit from exploiting the environment changing direction. I see a lot of individuals very concerned and wanting to change, but they have made the mistake of relying upon environmental groups, big mistake. Most are corrupt. Or a government, totally corrupt. Our government, I wouldn't believe anything anyone ever says out of our government for any reason, because they're sociopathic. They have no compassion for the truth. But I do believe in individuals. So you're on your own, work with other people, but if you wait, then you're going to be watching Katrina, and you're not going to like some of the things these people, I know because I've already pre-interviewed them, what they're going to be saying is coming at us everywhere. So we must see in an act of resistance, even if it appears futile, a moral victory. Now, according to Chris Hedges, African Americans understand in a way perhaps only the oppressed can grasp that our character and dignity will be measured by our ability to name and resist the malignant forces that seem to hold us in a death grip. Catastrophic climate change is inevitable. Nothing we do, nothing, will change at least 10 of the tipping points. I've spent 9 years of my career as a scientist, as an environmentalist, as a conservationist, studying this in depth. It's too late. Now, it's not too late to mitigate some of the other consequences, like planting trees, for example, but those things that are going to tip are tipping. That's why you had 119 degrees 2 days ago, and that's going to be the new warm. It'll get hotter than that. So imagine that you're now living in 119 degrees. You cannot go out in the daytime. You have a heat stroke. No plants are going to grow unless they are already climatized. Most are not. You can't keep your pet outside. And yet we have done nothing except squirrel ourselves away into our homes or offices and assume somehow the government will change it, technology will change it. It's not going to happen. Our technology and science will not save us. The future of humanity is now in peril. At best, we can mitigate the crisis. We cannot avert it. We are fighting for our lives. If we do not rapidly build militant movements of sustained revolt, movements willing to challenge the law and attack the structures of the corporate state, we will join the 99.9% of species that have vanished since life first appeared on the planet. Denial requires a willful misreading of the science, and from my perspective, I have seen nothing in my adult life but scientists betraying their oath, doctors betraying their oath. They're living through dogmas, rituals, and agreed-upon social contracts. If you prescribe a drug, if you diagnose a kid, if you give an operation that's not needed, if you give a chemotherapy that's not going to do any good, you'll be rewarded. If you challenge it, we will call you a denier and we will punish you. And it's very easy. It's super easy on the left since there's so many people willing to react but never do scholarship or reason. And the same, there's no help on the right at all. So imagine who's going to look for the truth if the truth has already been bought and sold. Where are you going to get your truth? How are you going to know what to do? How are you going to know if there's a procedure that works or a procedure that doesn't? A good place to live or a bad place to live? No one's going to tell you that. Do you really think the diminutive governor of, what a disgrace, of Jerry Brown, do you really think that he's going to tell you that this state is unsustainable, that we're putting ourselves at risk by living here, where we have nuclear reactors that should have been closed down and decommissioned? Even if they were decommissioned tomorrow, it would take years to get rid of the spent fuel rods because there's no place to put them. Hence, any earthquake, you're going to have the same reaction as if the plant was on, if it was off, because the nuclear material is still there and it's still fissionable. Do you really think someone's going to say it's time that we found another place to live? Let's look for more sustainable places and let's make a method of getting you from point A to point B so at least you can have a good place to live? No, it's not going to happen because down goes property values, down goes the tax base, down goes the money that's available for municipalities either to squander or spend in a meaningful or useless way. And politicians are not going to do that. In fact, no one's going to do that. So we have a system that has agreed to be disingenuous and not be honest. They will say, well, we have scientists looking at this. Yeah, yeah, just like the scientists looked at tobacco smoke for 100 years. Is that same scientists look at DDT and asbestos? It wasn't you, the government, that showed that these were dangerous. It were individual, courageous scientists, activists, and then the public. So what do you do? The trouble is we must become more in their face. And in the North, we're seeing it become just like the South, infernos. Tens of millions of human beings, especially in the global South, are being herded into the climate furnaces of immolation. And we in the North will soon follow. The Earth's temperatures are rising by more than 1 degree Celsius since the late 19th century, and it's almost certain to rise a few more degrees even if we stop all carbon emissions today. The last time the Earth's temperatures rose 4 degrees, the polar ice caps disappeared and the seas were hundreds of feet above their current levels. Climate change is interacting with two previously existing crises, and climate change and the new geography of violence. On the one hand, the legacy of neoliberal economic restructuring has weakened states in the global South so they don't have the capacity to pave the roads, educate the population, to help farmers who are in distress. On the other hand, much of the global South is littered with cheap weapons and veterans of previous conflicts who know how to use those cheap weapons, but nothing else. In this comes the extreme weather of climate change. In states that have been systematically reduced to the point where they can't respond, even if they wanted to, how do people adapt to climate change? How do they adapt to the drought, to the floods? Very often, you pick up surplus weaponry. You go after your neighbor's cattle. Or do you blame it all on your neighbor's ideology or ethnicity? Underneath a lot of these ethnic and religious conflicts, we see the climate element. The great danger in climate change is that at a certain point, you will see the collapse of natural ecosystems, the dying of tropical forests, which are currently carbon sinks. They pull in CO2 out of the atmosphere. But if they die, and they are, and all that wood burns or rots, they can become not emitters of net emitters of greenhouse gases. They're the huge deposits of methane, frozen methane in the Arctic. These are already beginning to come out. We have the technology to build alternative energy and food systems, but the fossil fuel industry, the most powerful industry in the world, has blocked all meaningful attempts to curb fossil fuel extraction and reduce energy consumption. Meat and dairy and egg producers responding to consumer demand are responsible for the emission of more greenhouse gases than the entire global transportation sector. Livestock generates enormous amounts of methane, which is 86 times more destructive than CO2. Livestock also produces 65% of nitrous oxide resulting from human activity, a gas that has 296 times the global warming potential of carbon dioxide. The massive animal agricultural industry, like the fossil fuel industry, receives billions of dollars in subsidies from the U.S. government, and corrupt and pliant politicians who do the bidding of these industries receive millions in return from lobbyists. It is legalized bribery, and it won't stop until this political system is no longer supported. I'm Gary Null. Talk back time right now. Give us a call at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And while you are doing that, I'm going to share a commentary from Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report. And it is entitled, Why Bernie Sanders is an Imperialist Pig. The United States is a predatory nation, conceived and settled as a thief, exterminator, and enslaver of other peoples. The slave-based republic's phenomenal geographic expansion and economic growth were predicated on the super-exploitation of stolen African labor and the ruthless expropriation of native lands through the genocidal wars. An uninterrupted history of plunder, glorified in earlier times as manifest destiny and now as exalted as American exceptionalism, an inherently racist justification for intervention and domestic lawlessness. Assembled acre by bloody acre as a metastasizing empire, the United States demands total allegiance to its imperial project as a substitute for any genuine social contract among its inhabitants, a political culture custom-made for the rule of rich white people. The American project has been one long war of aggression that has shaped its borders, its internal social relations, and its global outlook and ambitions. It was founded as a consciously capitalist state that competed with other European powers through direct absorption of captured lands, brutal suppression of native peoples, and the fantastically accumulated capital through a diabolical efficient system of black chattel slavery, a 24/7 way against war against slaves. This system then morphed through two stages of Jim Crow to become a mass black incarceration state, a perpetual war, a political and physical containment against black America. And then he goes on specifically later to talk about Bernie Sanders. Quote, Bernie Sanders is a highly valued Democrat, the party's outreach director, and therefore, as Paul Street writes, the imperialist and sheepdogging fake socialist Democrat Party company man that some of us on the hard radical left said, Sanders is a warmonger, not merely by association, but by virtue of his own positions. He favors more sanctions against Russia. In addition to the sanctions leveled against Moscow in 2014 and 16 for its measured response to the U.S.-backed fascist coup against the democratically elected government of the Ukraine. Rather than surrender to U.S. bullying, Russia came to the military aid of the sovereign and internationally recognized government of Syria in 2015, upsetting the U.S.'s game plan for an Islamic jihadist victory. Back in April of this year, on NBC's Meet the Press, Sanders mimicked the Godfather when asked what he would do to force the Russians' hand to the table. He said, quote, I think you may want to make them an offer they can't refuse. And that means tightening the screws on them, dealing with sanctions, letting them know that we need their help. They have got to come to the table and not maintain this horrific dictator, end quote. Of course, it is the United States that has sabotaged every international agreement to rein in its jihadist mercenaries in Syria. Sanders is a regime changer, which means he thinks the United States, in combination with self-selected allies, is above international law. That is exceptional. Quote, we got to work with countries around the world for a political solution to get rid of this guy, Syrian President Assad, and to finally bring peace and stability to the country, which has been so decimated, end quote. Then it goes on to talk about what else Sanders has done. I agree with him on that point. On some issues, Bernie Sanders is very reasonable. On his overseas and foreign issues, he is no better than all the other neocons. Isn't it ironic? Syria is a sovereign nation, and yet we've already, and all the talking heads on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, they're already excited by the idea that America, along with the jihadists, ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda killers, will have control over at least one-third of Syria. And yet no one's talking about this is a sovereign nation, and we are nothing more than imperialistic, and that means they're all supporting it. I'm sorry we don't have time for on our regular calls, but we have to say goodbye to our regular stations. Sorry we went over a minute there. But to finish out the hour, let's go to Ronald on Long Island. Ronald, you're up.
Good afternoon. Back on March 7th in the New York Times, there was a very interesting page which stated that global warming will end about the year 2060, and another ice age will begin, and that there is no relationship between the amount of carbon dioxide emission and global warming, rather that it's a natural phenomenon.
David, I'm familiar.
Ronald.
Ronald, I'm familiar with that, but remember, that's just global warming denialism, and there are thousands of individuals who are being paid to support that and put that concept forward. And then you have the real science, which shows that that is not true. So I prefer to go with the real science, not the corporate science. Thank you, Ronald, for sharing that. Thank you all for listening. I'm looking forward to tomorrow's show. Hope you are too. Have a nice day, everyone.